Welcome back to Toys on Tap. This week is a dope week with Mind Sponge Toy coming on the podcast. Colors like this are not seen everywhere. Figures like this are not seen everywhere. You will not want to miss these pieces in this episode. We had a little bit of technical difficulties with internet, got it smoothed out about halfway through. So bear with us. We're moving in the studio, fixing the internet, doing all kinds of things. If you want to jump on and support Toys on Tap, you can like, follow, rate, review wherever you get podcasts. You can follow us on social media at Toys on Tap. And more than anything, you can just comment on all the cool artist things that happen on Instagram, because holy moly, they're incredible. Now let's jump into this week's episode of Toys on Tap.
Bam! You know, you really notice it.
Yeah. All right, then. Let's jump in. Where I think we're ready to hit the ground running. If you are.
Oh yeah.
Great. We start every episode the same way. Please introduce yourself. Tell us who you are, what you do.
I'm Bill Mangano. I design things. Would have said just art figurines about 2 months ago, but we just did a cuckoo clock and. Just did some sneakers we're looking into doing. Of course, this would be like for down the road, but I basically design things. I'm also a counselor as well that I do part-time on the side. So I kind of keep things multifaceted that way. Keep myself guessing.
Dang. Dude, your work is noticeable. The colors are vibrant. Everything about the work is huge. And the figures are huge as well. But we got to walk it back and find out where you come from, all that kind of stuff. Tell me about childhood. Tell me about the toys you're playing with, those types of things, all that going on.
Sure. You know, when I think of childhood early, it's like Sesame Street, that sort of stuff, right? Muppets, definitely an influence. Then, of course, a little later on, you're getting more like, you know, Transformers and Star Wars and that vibe. I'm an 80s kid, so, you know, in my opinion, the 80s stuff is pretty darn creative. Not that there's not a lot of cool stuff out there now, but that's, you know, my childhood, so I attach it to that. You know, and then Jurassic Park was a landmark movie for me as a kid. I would have been like 11 years old, something like that. So yeah, just having like a good imagination has been a big asset to me. You know, I used to go in the backyard as a little kid. I was an only child, so I'd be like playing with sticks and leaves, like total weird kid. But you know, it kind of helped my imagination because I had to like imagine and come up with things to do on my own, and that's been an asset later on in my life.
Yeah, the only memory, you know, I used to watch Sesame Street growing up, and then every once in a while PBS has those like telethons or whatever they're called.
Yeah,
and I remember being a kid and watching 45 minutes of a telethon because I wanted a Snuffleupagus like little plush. Yeah. Sad day, never got it. Never got that plush, never did anything. But holy moly, I remember watching that thing so vividly.
Sure, I was transfixed. Bert and Ernie, too, I liked that. I remember watching that, which was part of Sesame Street. But yeah, that's my early memories. Definitely a lot of like puppetry and Muppets, that sort of thing. Fraggle Rock. You know, I'm talking like, I don't know, 3 or 4 years old to like 7 or 8 around then, for sure.
Yeah. I mean, as you get older, when does art kind of pick up in your life? Because your pieces speak to a level of art that's like you're playing with colors, which is its own thing with color theory, and you're playing with 3D design and all kinds of stuff now. So where does art kind of start in your life?
Where does it start? I would say, you know, I started writing poetry and got really into music as a teenager, like mid-teens. And then I discovered I was into like keyboard synthesizers because it could pretty much do just about anything with like a workstation back in the day. Now you can just do it with the software. But so music's been a huge part of my life. So that was probably the first form that I took on, you know, and then writing little poems. But then I got a little more into like the abstract painting and that sort of thing in my 20s. I didn't start charting these out until like 10 years ago. It was just a hobby for fun. And then, you know, the color carbon printing came along, technology kind of caught up, and I figured out a way to evolve into that. And it's been the most thrilling art that I've been able to make in my life. I feel very blessed to be able to create these. I've had such a creative surge after my father passed away. I kind of channeled that sadness into like art therapy, and it's been kind of a motivator, and not kind of, it's been a motivator. It's been really actually pretty therapeutic. I feel pretty good, you know?
Yeah. Tell me about this. Did you have a high school band? I mean, you're doing synthesizer. That's gotta be the cool thing. Did you do music like that?
Yeah. More in college, in college. High school, I was still, you know, undiagnosed ADHD, had a hard time centering my focus. I'm very hyper. So I kind of like was more about just goofing around and partying, I guess, pretty much. And then I started getting more focused on playing music towards the end of college. And so yeah, I had bands in college. I had a band I was playing in Chicago when I lived there for a while. You know, it's like we thought we were Guns N' Roses before we had any success, or like Rolling Stones. Like we were like partying like actual rock stars, but we weren't really making any money from it. So looking back, those were fun times, but you know, I think I found my calling more with this type of thing. I still play music though with synthesizers all the time. I love making beats and little like loops and stuff like that. And would like to eventually incorporate some of that stuff into the reels I'm doing and all that. But I'm not super duper tech savvy, so I'd like have to figure out how to do all these things.
Yeah. I mean, then we go to college. We talking like some kind of art degree there, or did you pivot and go the other way?
What up, toy nerds? This is Ray.
And Dave. Go check out our brand new YouTube channel, The Toy Rats.
We make toys.
We talk about toys.
We talk about old toys.
And new toys.
And toys that we make.
And we're just a bunch of goofballs. It's a good time.
We make fun of Dave a lot.
I'm all right with that. So yeah, if you get a chance, go check out Toy Rats on YouTube. You won't be disappointed. You might be.
Yeah, you could. Who knows?
You gotta check it out.
Toy Rats. YouTube.
Bye.
I got to advertise. I was copywriting, basically, was my general major. So I got like a mass communication degree. And so I went out to Chicago, got some experience with like digital art and working in Photoshop and Illustrator, Adobe Animate. So basically the Adobe Workshop group. And, you know, started with that. And then kind of became disenchanted with that. And then came back here, worked with my dad for a while. He was a dentist, so I ran his office. So that gave me kind of a background in small business and entrepreneurial. And so I feel like all these things that happened led to this, you know, kind of prepared me.
Man, and we have 10 years of Mind Sponge, which is wild.
Well, just designing. Yeah, I really just started, you know, the brand and the idea like about 13 months ago after I 3D printed the Bad Penguin. And I think the second one was the Junk Bot. And so I kind of met this rendering guy and we hit it off and he kind of saw the vision. And so we've been working together ever since. And he does fantastic work. You know, I'm the one conceptualizing and getting the images and kind of guiding him through the process, but he's the one that's doing the 3D sculpting. And he's been a real asset too.
Oh my gosh. So the stuff that you said 10 years that you've been coming up with stuff, but Mind Sponge has kind of started 14 months ago. What is that 10 years?
Yeah.
Take me to the beginning of the 10 years. Where does that kind of encapsulate?
Well, it's when I first probably really started heavily collecting art toys, as you can see behind me right there. It supersized me. I just thought that was hilarious. I remember going through our airport customs and the people were like looking at it, laughing their asses off. I was like, this is just so cool. You know, I purchased pieces prior to that, but that was like the transcendent moment where I'm like, all right, I think I'm like addicted to these things now. And from there, I just continued to collect. And, you know, I've sampled a lot of different artists too in the collection. I think we have like 200 something pieces over here scattered throughout the house. So it's almost like a little art toy museum over here already. Yeah, well, I was, you know, working for my father. You know, I had some issues with addiction. So I wasn't that focused all the time. My life was a lot of roller coaster up and down. I was also still doing a lot of traveling and visiting a lot of different like art museums and picking up different cultures where I traveled. But my lifestyle was a little bit unhealthy, I would say. So I kind of turned that around like 5 years ago. And that's without that, I wouldn't have been able to do all this either. So it was like getting my life back together and just kind of picking up the pieces. Then my father dies right after that. And then I'm like, okay, what am I going to do? Life isn't going to last forever. I want to be able to say I tried doing something, you know, that kind of made it so I could be a creative person, possibly make it a living out just being creative, which is hopefully the eventual goal with all this. But for now, it's like I'm splitting my time a little bit between two different types of careers, which in a way is kind of provides a nice balance.
Yeah. Tell me about the first idea of, first walk me back. How does Mind Sponge, just the name, start? 14 months ago, you come up with a name. Where's that?
It was going to be Mind's Eye. And then I'm talking to the dude from Tramps. And he's like, well, wait a minute. Mind's Eye Toys in Toronto. And so I was like, okay. I didn't even know that at that point in time. Because I kind of had drifted away from the scene for a few years. So I was like, well, yeah, I definitely want to step on it. I thought, okay, if I'm going to change the name, I want to keep the mind part in there or keep part of that. That so it's either going to be Electro Mind or Mind Sponge. And I thought Mind Sponge had more of a ring to it. And then also that's a theory. It's like a pop culture theory where it's how we select, you know, what we gravitate towards, basically. It's almost like when you learn a new word and you start hearing it everywhere. It's like, what did I think before when I was hearing that word, right? So it's kind of like that. And I thought that was an interesting concept to kind of tie into it, at least slightly. So it's a newer theory. So I figured that could be a good logo. So it kind of evolved. And I'm happy the way it did. Some of this stuff's just happened, like by mistake, you know, like where it's not even necessarily planned out. Like the Kaleido bat, for example, this guy here. I mean, this wasn't, the design was planned. Don't get me wrong. But the fact that it's our first vinyl release was not planned. It just worked out that way. I had our followers choose which one we did first. And then, I don't know, like a week or two after that, I went on Glitch and started discovering how to create these like mirrored effect videos of the designs, which are pretty trippy and cool. And I enjoy watching them anyways. Some people like them. And so it's like, it's all synced up. It wasn't even intentional. So it's been a little bit of just luck or just whatever you want to call that, you know?
I mean, so tell me your first piece, because I kind of want to walk through all of them with the bright colors and everything that's going on. I want to talk about it. What it looks like is someone got on acid and was like, these colors, this color, this color, because they match so well and they're so good.
Right over here, this one's like a tribute to Fred Kozik, or like kind of Ron English too. I was trying to be a little naughty. It's like a penguin quack pharmacist where he's taking pills and he's ready to Playboy, smoking a cigarette, kind of like a 90s. And this one's vinyl because I did that. Demang Toy, they're based in, I think, Shenzhen, China.
Mm-hmm.
So right around the same time that I was discovering the color carbon printing, I discovered their website saying, make your own toy, basically, vinyl art toy. And I thought, well, this is perfect. And so I worked with them, and they were very helpful and kind of guiding me. They did the STL for that one, and then I had them send me the file, and then it kind of evolved into me getting a 3MF file made with my rendering partner, and that's how it all came. But yeah, the design was just kind of meant to be lowbrow art, kind of like a 90s tongue-in-cheek throwback. You know, it was just really like a silly one to start off with, make people laugh. Yeah, I still think it holds up. There's a couple designs that we've done that were experimental that maybe I don't feel worked out as well as they could have, but that one still I feel like is pretty decent, you know?
Yeah, who sculpted that one? Who sculpted the penguin?
That would have been Demang Toy.
Okay. So they sculpted the whole thing for you.
Yes, they did the three. Then I got a little more into working with him, like getting them shaped up 3D wise, but then having my rendering partner touch them up or fix them up. But he's still doing the heavy lifting on the details, like Cerebula. Maybe I mapped out the two-dimensional design of this, but some of the detail on this thing is crazy. But I conceptualize everything where it says yes up there. The magic eight ball. He didn't even know what a magic eight ball was because he's from Indonesia. And I guess that's not as big of a thing over there. So this is very international, this whole thing. But yeah, it's I've been kind of transformed from dreaming this up to almost like creative director where I'm overseeing the names, the concepts, the specific designs, you know, all these little ideas like the Kaleido bat. This one was going to be a baseball bat. And then the Guardians/Indians lost in the playoffs to the Yankees last year, and I decided I don't really want to do baseball. So my grandpa was a pharmacist, and I thought maybe let's do a pestle and mortar, kind of make it more mysterious, like he's whipping up concoctions and get a little lore behind it that way. It's a little more depth to the character that way.
Yeah, the one I'm always focused on and interested in is the duck one. Which one is that one?
We interrupted this broadcast of Toys on Tap to bring you this. Meanwhile, in a galaxy of bootleg treasures, DOV-2, we have an engine failure. We must crash land on DKE Toy Planet. Oh my, we're doomed. Wait, salvation. Hooray, we're saved, DOV-2. Limited edition custom artist made action figures and DKE toys.
Check out www.dketoys.com for a full catalog.
Hooray for custom action figures.
DKE.
Oh, the Quack Tank? That's a new favorite.
It's insane.
Yeah. Yeah, I love this one. This is one of my favorites because you're smashing together two different worlds, like cute child's toy with like military, like war stuff. And that's one thing I've been really big on trying to do is like smash two different ideas together. That's been almost like, that's why Mind Sponge is smashed together. A lot of the names are like just one word. Like, I'm not trying to make it confusing. I just feel like that's kind of the aesthetic of the brand. I'm, you know, mostly it's like Dolly and Gowdy and Kaz, Ron English, Futura, people like that that came before me that totally helped, you know, make all this stuff. If it wasn't for their art, I don't know if I'd have as much of a baseline to create from. You know, I needed that to kind of be a jumping pad from there.
Yeah, which is insane. They look great. Are these ones that you're holding up printed?
Oh, they're PLA.
PLA. Are they all slotted to get made in vinyl or resin or something?
I sure hope so. I mean, there's a few that there's like 10 or 12 I left downstairs because I consider them more second tier. But some of those could be miniature resin ones. To be honest with you, it's kind of unbelievable how many ideas have just shown up. And so it's a little overwhelming, but very exciting. We have some really excellent ones coming. There's a blue whale one that I can't wait to do. There's a cheese one that we're going to call Cheesus, which I think could be pretty popular. Just a bunch of ideas just kind of coming and coming. We've kind of got like a food line coming where there's a pretzel one, hot dog one, cupcake one. So that might be its own like platform. So I've kind of just laid out all the groundwork, but now it's like doing the actual physical logistical stuff. And you know, we've just found a prototyping partner that will be taking on some of the 3D printing because I don't necessarily want to be busy with that all the time, but I still want to have things running. I have something running downstairs right now. But yeah, just kind of being able to find the right people to work with has been a big asset.
Yeah.
But yeah, hopefully someday they'll be able to get made, but there's priorities. Right now we're getting RoboSun and Kaleidobat made, and I don't know if you've seen the vinyl reels. We don't have them. We don't have them in hand, but we have them in China, about to be shipped, airlifted in about 2 to 3 weeks. And they're going to be bigger, by the way. This RoboSun will be 9 inches. This is only like 6.5. So it's going to be a big, stoic-looking, badass, surrealist figure. And then the bat also looks excellent. It's being done by the same people that work with like Ron English and Joe Ledbetter, Quix, Jeremy Maddle, all people. I love their work. And so I'm really thrilled to be working with them as well. Just finding the right people has been a big asset.
Yeah. You know, it's cool. We just had Ron English on and we were talking through his toys and the different places he's worked with and all that stuff. And it's cool to see that like the same factories that have produced some of these things, we now get to work with and produce our own stuff.
Yeah, I saw your design. I like yours as well, man. So you're working with doing the same. It's a little bit of like a communication gap sometimes, sort of. At least I felt like it was a little bit. But at the same time, they're churning it out at a pretty quick rate. And, I mean, they're awesome out there. Flying Lulu in China, big props to them. Big props to Strange Cat Toys. I mean, he basically broke it all down for me, Corey. So that was really helpful. And then like Rotofugi, it's just toys. A lot of people have been really friendly and helpful. A lot of other artists. So it's been really like a dream come true, honestly.
Tell me about this process, because you're working, when I help artists produce and stuff, I usually get a sculpt that's already done from the artist or at least an idea. Then I have a sculptor that I work with Toys on Tap. And then we have different factories that we'll work with. With yours being so spread out, over the course, how do you kind of take charge of everything that's happening?
Well, it's basically like a daily routine that's kind of worked up. Checking Instagram messages, emails, stuff like that. And then checking in with the factory, checking in with my different rendering artists, that are working on different pieces. Right now, I just have one being rendered because it felt like, I think a couple weeks ago, we had three going at the same time. It was like, that's too much. A couple a month is enough. But we have so many designs that I'm looking to put out there that I'd like to just stock up. And then you can release them, you know, in sequence. You introduce them like once a month, every 2 months, and just kind of build a brand that way because people seem to like the variety. But yeah, it's really coming up with the foundational chart first and then creating a hybrid image, like pulling together different images on Photoshop and then illustrating some of that. And then taking that and working with the rendering artist, kind of hand in hand, I kind of will give multiple images. And now you're able to take those images and make reels out of them so that they're moving. And that kind of helps as well. Basically, it's picking up on like stuff around me too, being open. Like the other day I was driving and the guy had a shirt on, his bicycle said Play Dead. And I started thinking about Play-Doh and Play Dead. And I ended up creating this like Play-Doh creature that I don't know if this will ever get made because it might not be up to my standards at the end of the day, but it's still cool. Kind of cool looking. And we mapped out like this blobby looking dude that's got like, he's kind of like melting. He's got his tongue hanging out. And then just this morning, Princess Nicotine, I think it was called. I heard something about this old movie from 1908. And then I was just watching Fifth Element last night and Lilu. I was thinking, what if you made Lilu like Princess Nicotine, gave her wings? And so we started conceptualizing that. So like partially like bionic, because a lot of stuff I like to do, like futurists, bionic stuff. And we sort of had a little sketch out of that. And that could be a pretty good concept, I think. I think that's probably stronger than the first one I mentioned. But that's kind of how my process works, just being open and then also kind of smashing stuff together and blending like a fusion of my influences out.
Yeah, you said something that I resonate with so well. I have two projects happening right now, and the goal for the year is to have four toys produced.
Hell yeah.
Two is enough for me at one time. Any more than two, I don't know that I could handle all at once.
Yeah, it's too much. Okay. I agree. It's you kind of have to map it out. Like people keep asking me, when's Quack Tank coming out? Well, we're going to definitely do that one next because the response, and Cerebralope will be next too because the response has just been overwhelmingly positive for those two. But then you also got people clamoring for Plumicus. This dude here has been real popular, as well as this Ninjato has been a big hit. I can get him off of there. This guy here is like a mantis ninja dude. I'm just trying to do like two at a time, no more than two at a time, and then working some of these miniature figures into the mix for the shows next year because I want to go to Collected Con, possibly the Toy Con Canada. Maybe even one more Assembly Required maybe as well. As you know, going to shows is a lot of work. So I'll have to see like what my priorities are, but definitely Collect-A-Con for sure. I'll be there for sure. And I'm hoping to have four vinyls and one resin with me by then. So it's very exciting to see how this goes.
Yeah. I think what's cool is like seeing the back end of it because we like following you on Instagram, we only see the done product. We only see like the prototypes, that kind of stuff. But hearing about, like, let's start with Quack Tank. Tell me about that piece from beginning to end. Are you just drawing and you're just like, hey, these would be fun together. Let's throw them together.
Yeah, pretty much. I just imagined, I have a rubber duck collection from traveling, you know, those tourist stores that have rubber ducks. So I started collecting those. Just goofing around. And so I probably have like, I kind of have a collecting problem. I got like 200 sneakers. I got 200 hard toys. So I got like 25 rubber ducks. And so I was just, you know, looking at those one day. I thought, you know, that could definitely be a design. And then I thought it would be kind of funny if you kind of mashed it together to make it more like military-like. It's kind of sort of based on this. It's a painting of Sonic Hedgehog and like video game characters, but he makes them look more militarized and sometimes like disintegrated halfway and stuff like that. I forget the artist's name, but that's kind of partially where I got the idea from too. And then at first, you know, yeah, I do like a little chart. I think I have one for the penguin just over here. It's nothing real artistic or beautiful looking. It's just the concept drawn out generally, you know, like, yeah, there's the penguin. So just like that, it's not anything real beautiful, that's for sure. So I'm not really an illustrator or a quest painter. I'm more of a digital artist. And so I'll end up, you know, throwing together imagery on Illustrator or Photoshop and then bringing that to my renderer, guiding him through the process. And so basically when it's actually in its final form, it's the 3D render is the actual piece of art from it, and also the figure, of course.
Yeah, I mean, that drawing is perfect. Those are the types of things that I always want to collect from artists, about their like prototype stages and those types of things, because that drawing is worth so much more, because that's where it started.
Oh, absolutely. That's the seeds of everything right there, you know, and it's just interesting to see how it all evolves too, you know, because stuff changes mid-process too. Like, I might make a change of color right when I receive the file from the rendering artist. I'll say, you know what, let's change this or change that. And honestly, it will help. Like, so sometimes like the vision changes as it evolves, as you're going through, like I was describing with the bat, or with like some of these, sometimes there's more limitations on with PLA. So I'm hoping, like, imagine this in resin with like translucent wings, that'd be sick, right? So like also working with different materials eventually is a big goal. And I haven't produced anything in resin yet, but I have a person that Strange Cat linked me up with that I'm hoping to, because there's translucence and metallic stuff that I think maybe better suited for that sort of production.
Yeah. I primarily work with soft vinyl. And so when I help people produce, like, we work with paint masks and stuff. When we look at your work, it is so bright and colorful, and it's like popping with colors. There's colors everywhere. Does that kind of affect like your bottom line, because there's so many colors? Does it make you worried when you do that? Or
yeah, it affects the amount of waste that's involved with the 3D printing is remarkable. It's like 90% of the material we use is just waste, you know. And my attitude's been like, just like, it's a means to an end for now. Like, I don't know if I'll be doing it this way for much longer, even necessarily prototyping with these printers or whatnot, but I'm not as concerned with the bottom line. Like, of course, I got to be able to make money, but like, I'm only doing 100 of each one to start, because I want to get the designs out there first. So like, instead of doing like 300 bats, we're doing 100, and then we'll do 100 quack tanks, and then we'll do 100 cerebralopes. That way it's, you're spreading the designs out there. The people that really want them are getting them. And then it builds demand possibly too. If they sell well, then of course we'll make more eventually, but I'm not going to do more than like 400 or 500 of any design ever. Like, I'm thinking 300 is the ceiling probably for the you know, next few years at least. So kind of keeping it relatively like scarce. But yeah, it's definitely affecting the bottom line. But I think that the pricing is not as bad as people made it seem, at least in my opinion. But we do have to charge, you know, a decent amount for these pieces. I wish they could be like $90. They're more like about 180. The bat's going to be 183, which I don't know why we put the 3 on there, but it's going to look, or it looks fantastic. We have the sample on our Instagram. And not to sound arrogant or anything, I just really love the pieces we're coming up with. I'm really proud to have made them, and hope other people like them as well. And then also we're having customizing artists. So I mentioned this, where this isn't even the full size. We want to do her like 12 inches. So it's just like, she's ridiculously tall. That's called Ecliptica. And so like, to have your customized artists get involved, and I've been speaking with artists that, you know, are looking to maybe collaborate at some point, but for now I just kind of want to focus on our designs and getting that core of them prototyped and working within that. But it's very exciting to me to see where this might all head.
Yeah. I mean, it's insane to see how cool all these are and the ideas, and they're just pumping. Tell me about public reception when you put your first toy out there.
I looked at what was out there and I thought, you know, I feel like I maybe have a different idea that's, you know, not so different that people aren't going to acknowledge it at all, but more like something that's relatable, that's a little bit of a different fusion. And so perhaps it's a good opportunity to just try doing this. And the response at first was slow, and but it wasn't bad at first. I mean, right away, we Unbox Industries was like following us after like a few days. Some people were really out there hunting us down, it seemed like. At first, some people added us right away. So the response was positive right away, but it wasn't excellent in terms of like the amount of followers. It was kind of slow.
Yeah. What's crazy, your following is not small at all. 38,000 people want to see you and your work.
Yeah. So it blew up, man. Yeah. It's been awesome.
And that's insane. And that's amazing. These pieces that are coming out are, with the pre-orders, what made you go the pre-order route than just producing and going for it?
You know, friends of mine said, oh, you should do a pre-order. And then I thought about the deposit idea for the bat, which that got, you know, about a quarter of them sold that way. But the logistics of doing it that way on like a Squarespace website is a tricky at best. I mean, I did figure it out with everyone for the most part, but I chose not to do it that way with the sun just because of the complications of having to charge people twice and then take the shipping off because it's all automated, you know. Again, I'm not like a tech, you know, savant. I'm more like middle ground, you know. So I've been working pretty hard, like, you know, maybe 50, 60 hours a week on this to make it all work because I'm also doing the videos and the Instagram posts and then also coming up with more design ideas. So it's been a very busy year, but I love doing it. I love Art Toys. It keeps me busy and I'm doing it.
That's the reality. Do we love doing this for just us, even if the toys don't sell? Do we just still love doing it?
Yeah, that's the thing. It's almost feel like I'm addicted to coming up with new designs. Like I almost told myself, just stop. There's too many now. You know, it's like it's just become this list. Like, and I just look at it like you can always weed out the stuff that's not quite as strong. So many ideas, you know. Which I'm never afraid to just say, let's just try it. I go buy an ice cream cone. Like you wouldn't think that. I'm sure there's other ones like Buff Monster and whatnot, but like the level of detail and then giving them a little fan. Like I wasn't sure that was going to work, but you know, we sketched it out and that took a while to kind of get it right. At first he was going to look different. So I guess we have a couple different versions of that one, but I kind of wanted more of a stoic design that kind of matched everything else we've been doing, where it had a little more of that like sneakerhead kind of urban vinyl look to it. But yeah, and just like trying to, you know, make stuff work that might not work. Kind of like Quack Tank. You wouldn't necessarily think that was going to work. At first it was going to be an actual tank with the giant rubber ducky head on top of it. And I said, that doesn't look right. I want him like walking around. So he's like marching around like a robot, you know?
Yeah. When these toys actually drop and they head into the hands of the collectors, tell me the actual specs about these toys. Are they having articulation? Are we talking movable parts, full paint, bigger size? Tell me all those different things.
The plan for the bat is he is 8 inches tall. Vinyl, and he'll have the metallic. It's going to look like this in color, pretty much almost identically. The detail will be a little bit more refined in terms of the quality, but this print's a pretty good print. The wings are some issues, but it will pretty much look like this. But yeah, articulation on the arms so you can move the arms. I want that on all of them, like if we could do it. Definitely with like Quack Tank. Some of them, the props are actually part of the arms so that you can't lose them. Actually, that's one of the things I've had a problem with my collections. I lose little parts and I can't find them. And so I thought that might actually be a nice touch.
Empire Blister. Empire Blisters. Specializing in action figure blisters. 2.75 inch or 1/18 scale. 19 different styles. Two sizes of clamshell figure cases. Four different bulk pack options. Quantities of 100 sample packs available. Empire Blisters.
Now functional Toys on Tap.
That means a 10% off coupon on checkout. Use code Toys on Tap 10. That's TOYSOMTAP 10.
Empire Blisters. Empire Blisters.
But then again, if I find out that people don't like that as much, I might change that on future editions. I just thought I'd keep it simple with that one. But like, the props, I might even fixate it on this one. I'm not sure what I'm going to do.
Oh, yeah. He's so good.
Yeah, this one's getting done for sure. You know, the ones I showed you initially that were sitting over here, those are the ones that are kind of the priority. And plus, eventually, once I do her, like this tall one, I'd like to do that him as well, which is our mascot, Mr. Mind Sponge, which... he's like a psychedelic, hyper-intelligent alien of some sorts. But he's like a graffiti artist, too. So he's got like the little can man there. And so kind of also like into that aesthetic as well, street art and hip-hop and electronic music, the festival people, just blending all these different cultures together. And also like more recently, you know, Meow Wolf and that sort of thing. I've been working on like world building a little bit, coming up with clips of just imaginary places for these animals, art toys to exist in, you know, just to sort of, not to get too deep on the lore, because I don't want to map that out too much. I kind of want people to use their imagination a little bit, but I can see it evolving in that direction eventually, where we're sort of creating like a little animated series or stuff like that. Then I also did a theme hip hop song that we recorded about 2 months ago. That actually I kind of like it. It's not like the greatest song ever, but it's pretty good for a theme song. And then we just did an EP, Where Is My Phone, which might not have anything to do with this, but I think it's kind of funny. It was like 7 songs, electronic dance music songs that I think could maybe be popular with, you know, the right crowd. And so I'm just trying to like get my hands in all types of different styles of creativity and just make it all sort of like mind sponge style, you know?
Yeah. I've worked with different factories. Demang has been one of them. They do prototyping for us when we need certain things. And
they're great.
Yeah. And there's an artist that takes toy photography for me, but he's in Australia, and it's easier for me to ship from Demang to Australia than it is Demang to here than to Australia.
Oh, sure.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So the thing that I hate and love all at the same time when making toys is color call outs and like figuring out the colors using Pantone. So hold up the bat.
Sure.
Yeah. We're talking that.
Yeah.
Yeah. That bat 10, 20 different areas that you need to like do call outs for.
Little dots right here. That stuff's so micro.
Yeah. So I know that they do some of it by hand, some of it with paint mask, some of it by the color of the vinyl.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me that process of like going back and forth on the colors, because that's always taken the longest with me. Like, oh, it's not the right shade. Oh, it needs to be changed. So tell me about that process with you.
Yeah, it can be frustrating, dude, no doubt. And especially the box design as well, which I can get into that later. But the details of, first I thought I'll get a Pantone book because the one I had was like kind of halfway ruined from college. I don't know, beer got spilled all over it or something. But
yeah,
basically, I found out that the website lets you on there for free, basically. So I started an account and I went through the colors, and they were pretty good at actually knowing what I was talking about. But there was a little bit of back and forth on the confusion of whether these should be white or metallic. Mm. They actually made a mistake making them metallic, but I like it better. So it's one of those happy accidents. And then, there was, I think, about 3 or 4 back and forth. So it took like first time they had a few wrong. Second time there was still like 1 or 2 wrong. And then they pretty much nailed it after that, which we ended up changing some of the colors on this. I think we might have done more like a blue outline here instead because I think it matches the wings better.
Mm.
But for the most part, it looks really the same. We also increased the size of the fangs just so they pop a little bit more so you can see them just ever so slightly, you know. And then like this right here, this heart is it's a tattoo I got. So I do that as well, like where I kind of put little parts of my life into the pieces, like the hourglass she's holding is sitting over there and just stuff like that.
Yeah, I think that's what makes a good toy for me when I can see, you know, on Toys on Tap, when we're interviewing these artists and we're talking through life and all these things, and then they tell me about their toy and I can see those pieces of their life in their toy. That's what makes me want to buy work, because I can see that you've poured everything that you are into that toy. The hardest part is when people do toys and they think it's going to be like a cash grab, or they're it's hard to get invested in that type of art, but to see that you're putting yourself in your work is insane. It's awesome.
Yeah. That's part of the therapeutic process too. It's kind of like, you know, putting little bits of my life in there. It somehow feels like it's therapeutic anyways. And, like this one here, Triceratops, he's got the, which is like the British Target, I guess, or something like that, that there. Basically, I put that right on there, which is a simplified version, but just like tattoos or we're doing a new one called Pyro Stilts, which is like this 8-legged alien, kind of based off of War of the Worlds.
Mm-hmm.
And he's got this lighter I got over there. It looks like a little miniature gun. It's like a, you know, I guess you'd call it like a mini blowtorch kind of thing.
Yeah.
And, so we're going to put that in there. So he's like, he's got it lit. The fire's coming out. Just all sorts of stuff. When I look around, this house is so filled with art and all sorts of stuff I can draw inspiration from. So it really is like the perfect little lab to create in. But we may need some more space here within the next couple of years, just because it's like kind of filled to the rafters with just stuff, you know?
Yeah. Where's this desire to collect like come from? And also, what's the theme of the collection? Like, I don't really have a theme. I have a thing over here that is just artists and all that stuff. And then I have a Sofubi cabinet. But, like, what's your go-to?
We're just looking at what we have here. You got Course, and then you got Mark Ryden up there that stick with the eyeballs. Got Dr. A, you got Instinct Toy, Kid Robot, Old School Kid Robot, Instinct Toy there again. I kind of draw the blank on who did the ostrich piece. That's an older one, but I love that. It's like real surrealistic. The Ron English one's funny as hell. That's an old Kid Robot one there, the two, the couple there. You can't tell if he's like attacking her or he's making love to her. The APO frogs, the little miniature frogs, they're sweet. Futura, I just love that. It just looks cool to me. I like Uncle too as well, so I thought that was kind of a cool figure. So it's, I'm not quite sure, to be honest with you. It's like, yeah, why do I want to collect them? It's I guess I like that blend of like comedy and surrealism and surprise, and then also sort of just like lighting up my place. You can't see them here, but I got more up on the rafters of top of my cabinetry here, and like Huck G, the girl in the bomb one. The bomb girl one's sweet. You got the Course with the shark over his head. And then we got, I think that's, I can't always remember all the arts. Oh, Mr. Clement, the big bunny astronaut. And I got a Fool's Paradise girl with the like Star Wars helmet on. Again, it's like surprising. You wouldn't think it's like a Barbie doll with like this Star Wars gear on. So those are all influences for sure.
Yeah. I mean, it's, what's crazy too is having, there's something about making toys that when you look around and you see the toys around you, it's almost like, oh, I can draw influence, or, oh, I want to be on a shelf that these artists made. Like, sure. That kind of stuff is so amazing. So tell me about the pre-orders that are happening right now for the toys.
We've got two pre-orders on www.mindspongetoy.com. One's for RoboSun, which is this guy right here. It'll be 9 inches. It's looking excellent. That should be out by like November, early November. It's on schedule too anyways. And then the bat, Kaleido bat, is coming. It should be shipped mid-August, they're saying. So I'm telling people September, but it might even come like a week early. And that's for 183. That'll be 8 inches. And they both look really very high quality. And I'm excited just to get them to add to my collection too, just because I think they're going to look sweet.
Yeah. I have to ask about the tariff situation. You guys dreading it?
It's not as that big of a hit as it could be. It could be a devastating hit, but they're quoting them at like, I think $5 per piece or $7. So it's basically a $700 addition to the cost. And then there'll be some port fees that are looking to be like $250, something like that. Plus then there's the airlifting. It's not cheap either. So that's why we have to charge what we're charging. You know, if I was charging like 120 or something, I might be pretty much just breaking even, you know? So I wanted to make sure we had a loyal following, that people were pretty amped up about the designs before I stepped into the realm of getting them made. So that's why I held off maybe a little longer than maybe I should have, but at the same time, that's allowed us to build up demand and desire to purchase the pieces more than we would have had like at the beginning of the year or something like that. I mean, since the beginning of the year, we've gained 28,000 people, and that's nuts to me.
I mean, it's the colors and the fact that you're making things that no one has seen before, and they're so insane and well done. I think it's going to be great. Yeah, the tariff thing is kind of a nightmare, but
it sucks.
How did you figure out the quote per piece?
Well, I was basically asking her up front, like, what do you think about like the cost here? This needs to be cost effective on some level. What are we going to quote these at? You know, what do you usually do with your other artists in this situation? And she said, you know, we'll do $7. And then there's an agent that's involved. I'm sure you're aware of that. So getting that lined up with him. And I'm still assuming there's going to be another, like maybe $500 of unforeseen expenses. I hope not, but I won't be upset if it's under that, because we'll still at least be more than breaking even, but we won't be making a ton of money off either piece necessarily. But what I'm trying to do is like lay the groundwork. So maybe you have to kind of sacrifice a little bit now, but all these pieces go out, they end up maybe catching on a little bit. You can make up to another 400 of them. And that's when you make your money, because the mold's already made and you're set from there. So Yeah, the money thing is not the number one reason I'm doing this. Of course, there's better ways to make money than make art toys. I'm doing it because I love it, but I also feel like if you're doing all this work and putting all this energy into something, you got to be able to make a living too, you know?
Yeah, I don't have an agent or I haven't had to work with an agent because we shipped the last toy I had hit right before tariff stuff happened.
Okay.
And the factory, I mean, they used to have that de minimis clause.
Yeah.
Where it was under a certain amount, it just went through. And the factory, so it was awesome. But that clause is no longer. And we have the new tariff stuff. So I'm assuming I'm just going to get a bill at some point that says, you owe me from the government. Yeah.
Do you think? Yeah. It wouldn't surprise me.
Yeah. So the next toy, because it ships, it'll be here like August or September. And yeah, we don't do any port stuff. We just do it through DHL and get that shipped over.
Okay, so you guys should look into that.
Okay. Yeah, it ships straight to my door. Like I'm not doing this like taking 30 days on a boat or something.
No, we're not either. It's a 1 week airlift and it's coming straight here. Yeah, I don't want to mess around with a bunch of BS. It's like, get it here quickly. I just imagine it on the boat getting like, I don't know, it just makes me uncomfortable. That's too long to be in shipment, 40 days or something like that.
Yeah.
There's too many things that could go wrong, too many variables. So
you ever seen those videos where the shipping containers like fall off the ships?
Sure. Yeah, it can happen. Yeah.
There is a story that always makes me panic. There is a story about, it's in the 80s. There's a beach in Europe in which Garfield phones kept washing up on shore. And they were...
Or something, probably, yeah.
They could not figure out any kind of thing about it until someone like went and explored and found the shipping container that was stuck, that had fallen off of a ship. And it was just releasing the Garfield phones. And they were like... It's so insane. And that's my biggest fear. I don't want the toys that we get made to be released on a beach.
Underwater. Somewhere. Yeah.
Yeah.
Anything can happen. The plane could crash too, I guess, but it's a lot less likely than something sloppy happening on the boat. You know, and plus you want it to be taken care of in transit, that they're not just getting slammed around and stuff. So I worry about that too. So it's, like I said, it's like, I'm thrilled and a little stressed out at the same time, but it's been a blast and I'm just trying to keep the faith and stay positive, because so far I've had plenty of evidence showing me that things are working out pretty well.
Yeah, which I'm pumped. I love when that happens. When you work with certain factories, there's like, you know, this feeling, you send them a lump sum of money and you wait.
Yeah.
And like, you have that back and forth, but it's crazy. It's crazy just to tell people like, hey, that money is just here for right now. Like, we're just waiting to see what happens.
Yeah, you get worried about getting played at first, like what's going to happen, you know?
Yeah.
You know, I won't really get into the specifics of it, but that's kind of what derailed us at first. Getting just kind of involved with the wrong group of people, talked to Strange Cat, figured it out, and moved on pretty quickly. So, you know, I kind of needed to, because I didn't know what I was doing. So I was just looking for people to make them in America. And I think maybe there's resin in America, I'm not sure, but there's definitely no vinyl art toy manufacturers, as far as I'm aware of, in America. Yeah. I had to outsource, which I was hoping to get them made like in Pittsburgh or something, but that's not an option. So,
yeah, I don't know about the hard vinyl figures. I know that there's soft vinyl. You have Mile High Sufubi in Colorado. Okay. You have Wonder Goblin, who's building his spot as we speak in, I don't know, somewhere on the East Coast, the Southeast Coast, somewhere over there. Yeah, so you have those two, and then like you have some that are in Mexico, so it's pretty close. And then you've got some in South America, but I think that's pretty much it. Like, I haven't heard much more coming out of the U.S. from soft vinyl.
Yeah,
and zero with vinyl
too. It's we had an option to go cheaper with the manufacturing of these, but I said I want our pieces to look, you know, top level, gallery look ready, you know, to look really nice, and that's important to me. So I figured, let's just do it right. Let's go with the pricier place that was recommended by a few different shop owners, and do it the right way. Because at first, that was one of the issues with the first group, is they were trying to send it to someone that was a little bit more for like smaller mascots and simpler stuff. And as you can see, this isn't arrogance, it's just the truth. They're not that simple looking. There's a lot of detail. And so I wanted to make sure that we had the best people possible on the case, you know?
Yeah. What is next for MindSponge in the next couple of years? Like, what are you hoping that this turns into? You already told us in the beginning of like potentially shoes later on and that kind of stuff. What's next? What are you hoping is right around the corner?
I don't know if it'll be right around the corner, but like, I guess next would be like, I guess successfully building up this repertoire of great designs and getting people interested in collecting them, collecting all of them maybe, or at least some of them, and reaching a wider audience, and then incorporating, music a little bit more as much as possible. And then also like world building has been really kind of been opening up to me, like building these, like maybe a location, even like a MindSponge location where it's like a little like Meow Wolf or something like that, but maybe our own little different version. Perhaps not though, maybe, you know, but maybe it's a VR thing, like getting into creating games and doing VR stuff. I think could be interesting. Of course I would need the right collaborator to create all this stuff, but I seem to have the creative vision. So I would just need to collaborate with somebody that could, you know, make it happen. But stuff like that. And then also building up the lore a little bit, getting a little more stories. We have every concept has a storyline, a short one and a basic concept, but maybe elaborating on that. And then I'm hoping to do some traveling with this too. You know, a lot of our following is international.
Yeah.
I think it's over 50% is in a big chunk of South America, but big international following. And so I'd like to do some shows in Asia and Europe and just wherever, any place really. South America is for sure too. Our biggest chunk is Santiago, Chile. It's 10% of our following, 9%. So I got to get down there as well.
Yeah. I mean, that's 3,000 people clamoring for your stuff in Chile. That's rad.
Yeah, it's awesome. Yeah, it's totally rad.
There is a bunch of what's cool about like in Asia, there's all these different conventions that happen and their collecting is so different than what we collect, and and they're collecting on a larger scale and their collector culture is massive. And so the goal, I think, is always, especially like, how do I get into that market? How do I figure out what they want? That kind of stuff. And I think you've got something that is going to pop everywhere.
Thank you, bro. Yeah, that's the goal, is I want it to be international minded. Like, I want people that are in the Serengeti in Africa to see it and kind of know what it is and get a kick out of it. Because it really is one world now. We're all connected by the internet. And so it's almost one consciousness, especially youth cultures. We all have our little segments of things we're into, of course, but we're all connected. And that's the truth without technology. So I kind of wanted to make stuff that's relatable to all different types of people. You know, you find your little group of weirdos in every city that are into it. And I mean that in a good way. I'm a weirdo, you know, so yeah, just kind of expanding from there. And like the sun, it's like major themes, a lot of them. Ice cream, that stuff could be found I'm sure in every continent, you know. So yeah, that's the goal for sure. And Asia is a big influence. I love the like wacky stuff you see in like Japan for sure. The stuff they create over there is so like just off the wall. And I really like that a lot. And I think I've been influenced by that as well. Like the Unbox Industries type stuff, where it's just very surprising the stuff they come up with. And I really like it.
Heck yeah. Dude, it's been awesome having you on the podcast. The last part of the podcast is where you get to just plug everything you've got going on, things coming up, drops coming up, shipments, all that stuff. So please, please plug away.
There's the two vinyl pieces, like I mentioned earlier. They're on our website, www.mindspongetoy.com. I'll show them real quick again. Why not? The two pieces. This is Robo Sun and Kaleidobat. And there are also going to be some pieces on Pop Shop Live. We have an account on there. And I'm going to be signing up with Tramped as well. So I should be on there with a couple pieces as well. So there'll be some different options for people. And then we have a YouTube page called MindSponge Toy. If you ever want to watch some like trippy videos or just see some highlights. Plus, I'm going to start doing a little more stuff of me talking and describing things and just whatnot, showing stuff when I go to conventions and stuff like that. And then we also have a TikTok, but it's very minimal right now. I just don't have the time. to do all these different things, but I'm hoping to grow that a little bit more too as well. That one might be Mind Sponge Toy, or it might be Mind Sponge Dot Toy, I think, something like that. I don't know it offhand, but the rest of them are just Mind Sponge Toy at whatever app it is. And besides that, we're going to be making some t-shirts for shows. Here's this is an example. I'm probably going to make this rounded instead for the Clyde Bat. I'll probably do another one with the sun head. So that way we have some t-shirts available. Those should be on our website in a couple of months. We'll just keep going from there. Thanks for having me on your show.